Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. If you haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. Right now we're up to episode 24 of season 7, the last regular, I put air quotes around that, regular episode of TNG. It's called Preemptive Strike. Directed by Patrick Stewart, teleplay goes to Rene Echevarria, story goes to Naren Shankar. It aired back on May 16th, 1994. In this episode, the recurring character Ro Laren finds her loyalties divided between Starfleet and a group of resistance fighters who oppose the Cardassian Union, as she and her fellow Bajorans once did. Trekabout's here to talk about this one. Eric and Richard are going to join me. We are going to break down Preemptive Strike. Before that, though, I'll mention this at the end of the episode, too, but I wanted to get it out of the way now in case people shut it off or something like that. Since TNG is wrapping up, we've got a couple things. I'm going to be doing a Q&A and a suggestion to improve the podcast type thing. After all the episodes are done, I'll do a episode about that. So if you guys want to send any questions you have to the Penske podcast, the Penske File Video at Gmail, the Penske File Video at gmail.com. Send me an email with any questions you might have, any suggestions for how to improve the show moving forward. We will discuss all of that in an episode after TNG finishes. So email your questions to thepenskefilevideo at gmail.com. And other than that, we're doing a giveaway since TNG is done. I did one giveaway back in season 5, I think. It was a t-shirt. I'm going to be doing another one here, and I'm going to be giving away two things. There's going to be Blu-rays for all of the Star Trek movies, so movies 1 to 10, which is the original series and the TNG movies. So those Blu-rays, a set of those, and then a set of Blu-rays for TNG's 1 to 7 seasons. So the collection, the full series of TNG on Blu-ray. That was an awkward way to say that. Full series of TNG on Blu-ray, one of those DVD sets. So if you guys are interested in the Blu-rays for the series or the Blu-rays for the original series and the TNG movies, you have to do enter the giveaway. We're going to do it by, I'm going to try to reward the Patreon backers who have done, who have sort of supported the show for a while and have been very generous with their donations. So the way it's going to work is everyone can enter this giveaway. The patrons on Patreon will get raffle tickets equal to their monthly donation. So if you submit at the $2 level, you get two tickets. If you submit at the $3, you get three tickets and so on and so forth. And so all of those people are automatically entered. Anyone else, send an email to thepenskefilevideo@gmail.com. Put it something like TNG Blu-ray in the subject line, just so I know which one it is. And if you email me those things, you'll get a raffle ticket into the drawing. Just one email. That's all. One ticket per person, except for the patrons who will get whatever their amount is in their patron donations. Patrons on Patreon can also email to add one extra ticket if they're so inclined. That's the way it's going to work, though. And if you guys join the Patreon before the season ends, so you probably have 2 weeks from this point, you can get that level of tickets added to the thing. Go to patreon.com/thepenskepodcast for all that stuff. So that's it. The Q&A, send in your questions, and the giveaway for the Blu-rays, you can do that. Send an email to thepenskefilevideo@gmail.com. And patrons, your tickets are added automatically at this point. So that's it, guys. Let me know if you have any questions. You can leave a question in the comments or you can email me. All that good stuff. Anyway, let's get to Preemptive Strike, the last regular episode. Trekabout's here to talk. Here we go.
Starfleet wants me to infiltrate the Maquis?
Because of your recent training. Because you're Bajoran. And because of your past troubles with Starfleet gives you a certain credibility.
Well, that's certainly true. And just how soon would this mission begin?
Immediately.
I see.
I've spent the better part of my life fighting the Cardassians. I never thought I'd be helping them out.
Well, this is a rare case when our interests and theirs coincide. We both want peace in the demilitarized zone.
I've heard a lot about the Maquis. One of my instructors at tactical training, Lieutenant Commander in Starfleet, a man I both admired and respected, he was sympathetic to them. He resigned and left to join them.
We're all sympathetic, Lieutenant. Our civilian population in the demilitarized zone is in a very difficult situation, but even sympathy has to end at some point. Peace Treaty isn't just a piece of paper. If the Maquis forces into a war with Cardassia, it could mean hundreds of thousands of lives. 2 years ago, Starfleet would never have tapped you for this mission. They must have a lot of confidence in you now.
The way I see it, there's one good reason to take this mission. And that's to validate your faith in me.
I'm recording. What method do you guys use to record? How come it gives you two audio tracks? I'm just curious about that.
I can't think today.
Pro Tools or something?
Logic.
Interesting.
It makes it easier to balance.
Yes. Yeah, it's weird. Because everything I do always spits together. When I use like the...
But it looks so fetching on him.
It's a stylish hat. Check. Work.
That is my favorite hat.
Where did you put the hat?
I want the hat. May I have it?
Okay, everything's good over here.
Okay.
All right. If you want to give me a couple claps, please. Good. Those are intense. All right, I'm going to plug in here. And I'm plugged in. All right, you can hear me. I can hear you. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Let me just pull it up on the internet. So if I have a question, preemptive strike TNG. There it is. All right. Ready, guys? 10 seconds.
Ready.
Hello, Trackabout. Welcome to your ultimate appearance on the TNG section of this podcast. And welcome to the penultimate episode of TNG, everybody. I think you all doubted in me that I'd be able to make it this far, but I showed you, Mom and Dad. How does that feel? Guys, how are you?
Good.
I'm doing all right, a little less spiteful towards my parents. But that's
you can check out my other podcast, Spiteful Towards My Parents. Anyway, let's talk about Preemptive Strike. I listened to your podcast about it. You seemed a little bit negative, maybe not negative, but you didn't seem smitten by it. Anything change recently? You feel different about this one?
Yeah, I like it. I mean, I always liked it, but I think that if I'm thinking back to when we talked about Preemptive Strike, which was, I don't know, like three lifetimes ago at this point, when you're watching the entire series in a row, I think it feels like a little bit of a letdown. Like, this is the second to last episode of the show, and they wasted on bringing back this weird character that was in like four episodes that no one really cared about. But, you know, watching it this time just as a standalone episode of the show, I think it's really good.
What I think is interesting about it is this is the right before All Good Things, which is the big finale movie, you know, grand ending. This is almost a spin-off episode in some ways. It's not quite as crass as it would be if we had all of the DS9 characters on them, if this was a straight crossover episode. But TNG's going off of the air. DS9 is going to be the show that's on. This is TNG telling a DS9-style story in some ways. It's dealing with Cardassia. It's dealing with the Maquis. It's dealing with, even in tone, it's more about deception and infiltration. It's if one of the things we've talked about a lot on our podcast of DS9 is that in TNG, the Federation, everybody is on face value. They're not going to lie. They're not going to bullshit you. They are kind of who they say they are. On DS9, that's not the case. We're dealing with civilizations that are much more deceptive. This is the TNG crew dealing with a mission with deception. This is Picard having to be a DS9-style hero.
Interesting.
I also think that, you know, this is the last normal episode of the show. And I think that all of my criticism of this is kind of coming from like a meta aspect of it, where I'm like, if I was sitting back in, when the fuck did this air? 1992, sometime 93, 94. All right, there we go, 94. If I was back in 94, 11 or 12 year old, whatever I would have been, I think I would have been really disappointed by this. And that's not to say it's a bad episode, but if I, you know, I've been watching the show and I'm like, we got this great cast of characters coming in here. I'm sure in their second to last episode, they are going to wrap up as many of these stories and get the main cast involved as much as possible.
Yeah.
Instead, the main cast is arguably the villains of this one, which is always weird when TNG does it. And I think a lot of this has to do with the fact that this placement is weird, that we bring back Ro. We have the Maquis serving as a huge part of this. And I guess we can get into why that's always a failure in TNG, at least. And we aren't using any of our main characters in any kind of sort of expected way, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a couple of things there, right? I mean, I think that your reaction to Preemptive Strike was very similar to my reaction when we covered it on Trekabout back in, you know, 1987 right. or whatever. And, you know, because it is, you know, coming as the second to last episode of the last season of the show, it's a weird placement. I don't think it's well placed in the season, right? I think it would have been much better if this had come maybe towards the midpoint of the season.
Maybe even if we had this episode, one more episode, and then all good things.
Maybe. It could certainly be. But I think that, you know, for me, you know, looking at the seventh season as a whole, you know, it's not a great season of the show. And, you know, directly before Preemptive Strike, I had to pull up the wiki to find out what the hell it's called. But we have Emergence, which is just kind of a terrible episode.
Which one was that?
Exactly. So it's I get why they did it. I get what they're trying to do. I think that it's so hard to know if Ro Laren was actually like some sort of beloved fan character or not. I mean, I wasn't going to Star Trek conventions and I was not really on the internet in 1993 and 1994. So I don't know if she was a really popular character. I mean, I think this might be a case of the writing staff and the creative staff behind TNG really being invested in the character of Ro Laren, because they wanted to give her the Kira role on DS9 and Michelle Forbes turned them down. So I think it's just them wanting to honor a character that they all really love. And if it doesn't come off exactly the best, I think it's only because of the placement, not necessarily because of the quality of the episode, which again, I think is pretty good.
I know. Maybe it would have even made more sense if they wanted to give the Ro Laren character an ending. There could have been a DS9 episode about Ro Laren, for example.
If
Preemptive Strike had been able to fit into this,
but then you get into a situation with like the Q episode with like Vosh or Loaxana Troi or something, and it's like, what the hell do I care about this?
Yeah, part? Of course, it definitely would have been a piece with the mistakes that they made in the early seasons of DS9. But
so you're saying they should have made one more mistake?
Well, maybe. I mean, in this way, I wonder if the level of mistake that putting this as the next to last episode of TNG is out would have been outweighed by the level of the mistake of resolving Ro Laren's storyline in DS9.
See, I think that I understand what you mean. I think that I'm also having been sort of in the weeds here. TNG almost went a little bit overboard with giving everybody their finale episode. They gave people that I would have been happy never seeing again a finale episode. And it felt towards the end like the show had just abandoned the characters. And I think Ro is actually probably the strongest character who needs a resolution. And I think it also ties into the last season of TNG. Once you start noticing it, almost every other episode, they're pushing DS9 on you. DS9 is either brought up in the background, or DS9 is where some guy was before we lost track of him, or we need to talk to Quark because Quark knows something. So it kind of feels like they're just selling out the show early, and it might just be that they don't have a lack of they don't have a collection of good ideas to go with at this point. But at the same time, it's weird to me, and I think that TNG does something where DS9 can't, where TNG can't sell a story effectively that's not involving the main cast members.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think you hit it on the nail when you said they were just out of good ideas. I'm not really a huge fan of the seventh season of TNG. I mean, it's fine, but if it didn't exist, I wouldn't necessarily be sad. And it's...
No, the A-team was on DS9 at this point.
Right. They, you know, I mean, a lot of them had moved on. And so I don't know exactly what was going on behind the scenes, but it's always seemed to me that, and I remember when we watched the seventh season straight through for Trek about that, they really didn't have anything else to do with these characters. They were really struggling for story ideas at this point and character ideas. You know, Michael Piller had basically moved on at this point. We have to remember as well that it was being showrun at this point by Jerry Taylor. So it was a little bit of a different show in the seventh season just because a different person was showrunning it. So I think you're seeing her sensibilities. Now, what that means for Star Trek Voyager, I don't know. But it is one of those things where you kind of have to look at it and say, I just don't think that she was as interested in telling character-based stories as Michael Piller was, but also, like, they had done all the sci-fi stuff they could do. You know, they weren't supposed to do a seventh season in the first place. So, you know, it was an extension because they wanted to keep the gravy train rolling, and they weren't exactly ready to roll out a movie.
Yeah, as they get deep. You need the tentpole TNG as you're kicking off Deep Space Nine and everything as well. So
But I guess the other... But the one thing that I would... caution is, so far the two TNG movies I've seen have been kind of crappy. So, you know, they really did run it. Maybe just TNG ran out of steam at that point in keeping it. I mean, again, we have gems like All Good Things, obviously, is one of the finest episodes of the series. There are some good episodes in the season, but yeah, I wonder if the... I guess it doesn't feel like they beat the dead horse with this. You know, we still do love TNG, but maybe it would have been stronger.
Yeah, I don't think the season is a total waste. It's a definite departure from what it was. And also, Richard, the movies might not have been good, but I'm pretty sure they all made money. So that's fair enough. Paramount's concerns.
Did Nemesis make money? I think that might have been the nail in the coffin.
Maybe not in America, but internationally, I'm sure it... Brought. I can check as we do this, but let's kick off the discussion of the actual episode, which seems a good place to start. So I thought that this was a problem because the fifth time maybe that we've heard the Maquis. TNG has never really done a good job of explaining what they are and why this conflict continues and why Starfleet is sort of hamstrung in being unable to resolve it. And I think that putting a character that you don't really have an attachment with, which would be Ro, into a situation where you don't really understand what the struggle of this group is kind of the fundamental problem of the whole narrative of the episode, which I think is a pretty good episode. What do you guys think?
That was a question that I had. Well, that was one of the questions that I had had when I first saw this. I didn't quite know who the Maquis was, why this was so. Again, having seen DS9, and maybe this is one of the reasons I think it might have been better folded into DS9, because they had established who that was, even though the roots of that were seeded in TNG. I guess you're right. They didn't really spin out the implications of who the Maquis were as well in TNG at this point.
Like, why are they called the Maquis? It is
right. It's some kind of like, it's an actual historical analog. There was an actual group called the Maquis in, like, I don't know, the 17th century France or something. Which is just like, okay.
But
whatever,
I mean, the show is just Star Trek is never subtle. You know, it's weird to me that no character has ever been like, the Maquis are called this because blah blah blah. You know, it seems like a total that they don't particularly care about it in a weird way.
Yeah, it should have been called the We Hate the Federation Club. No, I mean, I'm not a fan of the Maquis. I don't really ever get what they were trying to do with the Maquis. I mean, I know that they were trying to dirty up the universe and make the Federation out to be a little bit, at least, well, not the bad guy, but a little bit more morally gray for DS9's sake. I mean, that's what they were trying to do. And I think that also it is hard, and this is, again, something we ran into on Trek About when we were talking about these, because we did the same thing you were doing, which is running through each series and not interspersing them as they aired. So, you know, the Maquis two-parter on DS9 aired like a month or two before preemptive strike. So, you know, if you're watching both shows, hey, you totally get what this is, what's going on and all that stuff. But if you're just watching TNG, which I'm sure, honestly, most people were watching just TNG because it was a legit mass hit and DS9 is a kind of a cult classic. They don't know who the Maquis is. The episode presumes a level of knowledge about the Maquis and the Cardassians and even Ro, frankly, who I don't think has been in the show since Rascals in the early sixth season. So it's like, you know, her daddy issues and the whole thing. It is just, you know.
Well, in some ways, then it does maybe seem the opposite. It would make sense if this were a commercial for DS9. So, oh, hey, you're watching TNG. The show's about to go off the air. Well, what are you going to watch next season? Here's an example of DS9. Here's an introduction to that. But this almost seems more it's a gift to people who have followed through to DS9, are still watching TNG, and all right, we're going to give you a DS9 kind of story, so you get two episodes of DS9 this week.
I mean, that's why almost I feel like it may have been better for, I mean, I hate to go down a road of fixing things, because, you know, we weren't there, and who the hell knows, and we kind of have to approach what we're watching as it exists, but, you know, the Maquis two-parter, if it had come earlier in DS9's second season, then they could have slot preemptive strike in earlier in TNG's last season, and also maybe they, you know, because I was about to say, well, they could have done this as a more explicit crossover between the two shows and actually have, say, the Enterprise get sent to the Bajoran system to, you know, liaise with Ben Sisko and a deal with the Maquis. I mean, even making the Maquis two-parter like a crossover between the two shows or something. That would have been even more interesting, but I guess just logistically they couldn't have done that.
I kind of agree. Richard mentioned it earlier, where it's like that's almost kind of even in a way you could almost see this being more offensive. And I don't want to go into spoiler territory, but like I think that's just not an idea of. I think it would be tough if DS9 characters just started showing up in the second to last episode. And I'd say, what the hell is going on? Like, have they just given up on TNG? So anyway, as we get back to the storyline of Preemptive Strike, which I appreciate. I don't think this is a good title, but I always love it when in the movie or episode, someone says the title of the movie. And it's the Maquis guy in this one who says, we need a preemptive strike. I don't really understand the Picard angle here. And I think this ties into what we're saying, that it's weird to place this as the penultimate show. But I feel it's weird when TNG tries to play the crew as villains, and maybe not ostensibly villains in this one, but Picard seems remarkably disinterested in the ethics of what they're doing here.
Yeah, one of the, again, going from DS9 and not wanting to go too far into that, but there is a late DS9 episode that hinges around the manufacturing of evidence in order to get something done, and it's treated as a major event in, you know, the character's moral life. It's very agonized over. And here Picard basically just says, okay, well, we'll manufacture the evidence and it'll be fine and then they'll go out. He doesn't seem to have, it's true, he doesn't seem to have any qualms about whether or not what he's doing is wrong, as long as he, you know, Picard is not really an ends justify the means kind of guy, and he makes several ends justify the means decisions in this.
And it's coming hot off the tail of Journey's End, where he was all up in arms about the Native Americans. You know, it seems a little bit inconsistent that he's so indifferent, Eric.
Which also had to do with this Cardassian treaty that the Federation signed. So let me spin something out here, which is going to be dangerous because taking the governmental structure and politics of Star Trek seriously is always a fool's errand. But let's do it anyway for fun. I think that what's going on here is the Cardassian treaty and the Maquis are a political problem that are directly resulted from the fact that the Federation Council voted on this treaty and the, what, however it works. I mean, if it's, you know, let's assume for the sake of argument that the Federation Council votes on treaties and then the Federation president says, yeah, okay, that's fine or whatever. Right.
Yep.
So if you look at it that way and say, this is a political situation that, that Starfleet has been tasked with dealing with, Starfleet as a, you know, a separate lower tier, not a branch of government, but a, you know, basically they don't have any right to question political, civilian political decisions. And so for me, I look at this and I say, okay, Picard obviously will question Starfleet. You know, we've seen that going back as far as like something from like Conspiracy from the first season, right?
Right.
He's not really in the business, and Starfleet isn't really in the business of questioning the civilian political decisions of the Federation. And so, you know, I think, yes, you're right that the episode and the Maquis situation in general may have been a little bit stronger if it had shown Starfleet officers having some moral doubts about what they were doing, even as they were saying, well, you know what? Yeah, I have moral doubts about this, but the Federation Council is telling us to do this, so we have to do it because that would be violating our orders and having some sort of minor coup on our hands. But then again, I don't think it's that well thought out. So right. I'm basically retconning or coming up with fan theories to justify why exactly a character that we all know and love like Picard is acting like an asshole.
And I guess in some ways we do see in DS9 Federation officers who have looked at the situation and says, you know, I can't work for an organization that is supporting this policy, which is how, in a way, the Maquis is supposed to have formed, by people who believe that the law is wrong, who don't recognize that, who believe that the Federation has failed and abandoned them. Again, Picard, the closest to Picard's view is that he may, and I don't know if this is how Picard actually would think about this, but I can see a view of the Maquis that is, these people are spoiled children who want everything and can't have that. I mean, there is an early DS9 episode. Again, we're talking about DS9 a lot. I guess it's the nature of this particular beast, though, where one of the characters is meeting a man who has to give up his home for some science MacGuffin reasons, and it'll ultimately he has to move on. And I think Picard is viewing the people who are living on these colonies as, well, this land doesn't belong to you anymore. Either it's Cardassian land now. If you don't like living by Cardassian rules, well, we'll help you get a new place. It's not like the Federation is utterly leaving these people out to the wolves. If any of them said they wanted help relocating,
right,
the Federation would help them in a minute.
I think that's the big problem, and it ties into Journey's End, too, where in Journey's End they make the argument that it's like, they're like, you know, these people have only been here for like 15 years. And they go, yeah, but still, they're Native Americans. Like, it looks bad. So the problem here is that apparently Starfleet's like JV negotiation team has been all over the Cardassian Treaty, because this is like the only race relations we've seen that hasn't been clean cut in how things have gone. Nechayev makes mention about this is a classic compromise, and that both sides, neither one got what they wanted out of it.
But the Federation is complaining a lot less than the Cardassians are, maybe.
Right. But although the people living on those planets who apparently settled there don't seem to want to be. I would kind of side with Starfleet's thing, would be like, listen, motherfuckers, like, we'll move you to a different planet. Just stop killing other people. That would be the primo thing to do. It's a weird non-TNG aspect, I guess.
I think in general, and, you know, not to talk the Maquis stuff into the ground, but I think in general the Maquis situation is too politically complicated, and frankly is not something that Star Trek is the best at. We are talking about a space opera show at its core, which is, you know, doesn't really ask a lot of hard questions about the nature of government or it's not. So, I don't know why they went down this road even of making us talk about this sort of thing like it's a real thing.
Yeah, there is
there's the Federation, there's Starfleet, there's Cardassians, there are the Romulans. There's no, like, we don't need to get into a big dispute about what exactly the different cultural factions in the Federation are, because right. frankly, it's not going to make any sense. It's not going to be satisfying. There's no way you're ever going to be able to seriously actually create out of whole cloth an entire alien civilization. Cause you know, the Federation is an alien civilization to us,
right.
without satisfying at all. There's just no way to do it.
I mean, normally they do, you know, Scotland planet. That's the kind of way that we do. We have subcultures in the Federation. Right. And Ryza, which it still hasn't really figured out what that is.
Yeah. Do you think that, I mean, I guess that's kind of the problem with the episode, is that you're trying to take a sort of advanced political statement amongst all these different groups. None of it really makes a lot of sense. Picard's sort of willingness to go along with it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. What my favorite moment of this episode is, so I guess we'll switch to that, right, is...
When it ends.
I think the last 5 minutes are actually pretty good for two reasons. It shows the difference between Riker and Picard. I love the fact that Riker kind of endorses Ro leaving. And Picard,
I also like it when Riker shows. I also just like it when Riker shows a little bit of skin. That's always a good. That's always a good time.
It's always a little bit sass. He looks like something. I couldn't place what it was. But I also like the Picard.
A sexy man, that's what he looks like.
The sexy man with a broken nose, basically, because he's Bajoran. And Picard's sort of ending, which I think is a good ending, but it's weird that it's the second to last episode and we're going to stare at Picard angrily looking off into the distance. But they didn't spend any time with Ro and the characters except for that very awkward opening party scene and her betraying Riker and Picard at the very end. Like... Would you have rather this episode involve the main characters, or do you think that this story has to do what it did?
I generally think that this is one of the stronger character episodes of the seventh season, even if it is about a character that I don't care about too much and we don't really have much of an investment in. I think that this episode does a really good job of, frankly, reestablishing the character of Ro Laren, because she hadn't been on the show for so long, almost two seasons. And, also grounding it in a very, connectable thing, which is daddy issues. Right. And so she misses her dead dad, or maybe he's not dead. Maybe he's off, taking space heroin or something. Who knows?
But the Cardassians tortured him for that recipe of the Bajoran food.
Hasperat. Yeah.
I imagine it like a sauerbraten.
It's a burrito. It's a space burrito.
Have you guys seen the remake of The Prisoner?
No.
I saw about 15 minutes of it. It was horrible.
It's horrible, but the best part of it is that in this remake of The Prisoner, all they eat are wraps in the village. And so I think like the sci-fi thing of the wrap is like it's an alien food that we can sort of sell as like believable, I guess.
Well, because
fucking burrito. There's no difference between a burrito and a wrap. Really.
Well, it's easy to sell it as an alien food because you don't know what the hell's in the wrap.
Right. Even though it looks like lettuce, it is definitely not lettuce.
It is not lettuce. It is Bajoran
Hasperat.
Lettuce. That's what it is. I'm with you. I think that like I said, I don't really want to see the rest of the characters. I mean, I've seen them enough. Yeah. I don't know. It's the end of the show. Like, what the hell, man? Let's give old Ro Laren a spin around this dial. I mean, why not? It's a fine episode. I think it does a good job. I think that having the other characters in it probably would have muddied the waters a little too much. I mean, because what are they even going to do? They're just going to sit around and go, oh, it's time for the tachyon burst. Whatever.
In some ways, it's a story that reminds me of like one of those Star Trek novels you have on your shelf. It's a side story. It's complete in itself. It has glimpses of the characters. It's not necessarily canonical. It doesn't necessarily matter. If the characters are acting a little differently than normal, that's all right. Like, as a... I guess as a side story, in a way, if I'm viewing it as that. something that's neither wholly TNG nor DS9, but just kind of its own standalone hour of television.
Yeah.
Maybe I like it a lot more than as an episode of TNG.
I would say this would be a great offshoot story, almost, judging by the offshoot stories that I've read for things like this, for like Star Wars and Star Trek. But I think I agree with that. I think I'm just annoyed by it, that I find it distracting in a weird way. Like the... You know, I don't even think it's really all that subtle, which I would have preferred. Like, the old man might as well just have, like, a name tag that says father figure on it when Roe Laren is talking to him. Is Picard supposed to be a father figure? Or I get the impression that Picard kind of wants to fuck Roe Laren.
I don't get that reaction at all. I actually think that I don't know that it's completely successful, because what episode of the seventh season of the show is, besides All Good Things, but... I actually think that that last scene between Laren and Ro, I guess, because I wanted to call her by her last name to be, you know, a gender parity, and I forgot the Bajorans like reverse it. I think that you know that last scene between Ro and Picard is actually really strong, and I think that if there's one real failing of the episode, I think it's that we don't get enough Picard and Ro together to really ground that. Yeah. I also frankly don't think that Ro Laren is in the show enough for us to care and for Picard to have developed such strong feelings for her.
Yes, I 100% mean, agree with that.
There's an alternate universe, A, where Donald Trump is not president, and B, where Michelle Forbes joined the show in the fifth season as a main cast member.
Or hell, even if she was one of those weird last season cast additions and they... You know, one of the main cast wanted to leave the show for whatever. LeVar Burton wanted to focus on something else, so they added Ro Laren. You know, so they added Ro Laren, and even if they're not using her, I mean, have this party sequence be the first scene of season 7.
Yes,
and then just, you know, maybe there's an episode or two. And then if the next to the last episode, after we've spent the season... Knowing that she genuinely does feel out of place, and she does feel conflicted, and maybe if... if we had... wanted to shape a Maquis storyline throughout the seventh season, I think, and this is with our 2016 television brains.
Yeah.
But the way we would have put that arc,
it's 2017 now.
I think you've reminded me of something, which I appreciate you doing that. Like, I think I agree with what you're saying. The episode is unsatisfying to me because Ro Laren's character hasn't been around enough for Picard's feelings towards her to be all that believable by the end. So I think that, like you're saying, making it a season-long story would actually make it a lot better. But I was trying to think, there are episodes of TNG where they can sell the one-off aspect of it, and it works. And there are episodes where they can't do it for some reason. I think notable failures are The Host, where it was totally unbelievable that Crusher would have this relationship all of a sudden. Like... Do you understand what the difference is between what makes an episode like this work and what doesn't?
Because I'm thinking about the one with Luoxana Troi falling in love with the guy who...
Half a Life, yeah.
Yes, I mean, that's similar enough to The Host, but I buy it in that, partially because Luoxana Troi is set up as the kind of character who would, you know, jump into a relationship more quickly than Crusher would, for example.
Right. That's a good point, yeah.
Also, old people need to jump on that shit because they're all going to die soon. I think that...
they're all going to die soon. Donald Trump is president.
The meteor.
I think that the fundamental difference here is that this episode in particular, and in general, episodes that do establish strong emotional ties, primarily between the main cast and guest stars, is that there's no level of history or intimacy presumed there. And this episode, or if there is, they haven't seen each other in a number of years, and so it makes sense that they don't exactly know what's going on in their lives, or that they're completely comfortable around each other. I mean, for example, like Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, no one ever heard of fucking Carol Marcus before, but it works because we didn't know what the hell Kirk had been doing for the 10 or 15 years between the end of the show and the motion picture and then Wrath of Khan.
Yep.
Obviously, he was off having a wonderful, lovely relationship heterosexually with this woman, Carol Marcus, and they had a gay son, which is fine. But I think that, you know, in this episode, it doesn't work because Picard is, he's too affected by this, and we don't know why. It would make a lot more sense if Ro Laren had been around more. Again, that's always one of the great unanswered questions for me of the character of Ro Laren in general, is that why wasn't she around more? Like, did they just forget about her? Was Michelle Forbes just not into it? I don't really get it.
I mean, the fact that she turned down the role on DS9 suggests that maybe she just didn't really like working in the, you know, on the project or playing the character. But
it's certainly possible, yeah.
What this is picking up is how they try to sell this idea that Picard feels this regret about that he didn't have a family, right?
Right.
Like that's part of Generations. That's something that's I don't really buy in Picard. Definitely TNG deals with the two-body problem. It's very difficult to have a career in Starfleet and a successful marriage. You know, you kind of have to make a lot of sacrifices. You know, I could see a version, again, that had seeded the Picard wanted to have a family but gave it up argument, and so where he views Ro Laren as a surrogate daughter, but she views Macias from the Maquis as the one who's her father figure. Like, I can see that being part of Picard's upset in this, because his surrogate daughter has rejected him for somebody else.
I agree. I think that's another way that they could have just strengthened the story a little bit there. Just make it like a dueling father figure type thing. Which doesn't really come across, because she spends very little time with Picard, and obviously previous to that. I think we've talked this one to into the ground, though. Let's go to final thoughts and ratings, where we're going to give a final summation of Preemptive Strike.
Alpha 7 to Alpha 9.
Go ahead.
Stand by to beam me aboard.
Standing by.
You can take the ship back to the Enterprise.
You're going with them?
It's been a long time since I really felt like I belonged somewhere. Could you tell Captain Picard something for me?
Of course. What is it?
Tell him I'm sorry.
So long, Ro. Take care of yourself.
Goodbye, Will.
All right, guys, let's get to Preemptive Strike. Before I get into that, I did want to do the reminder that we're doing a giveaway. Once All Good Things is done, we're going to be giving away a Blu-ray set of the TNG series and the 10 movies.
Are we eligible for it? Because what we could do is we could win it, and then we could give it away on our show.
That's true. That's kind of how Patreon works in the first place. But anyway, if you're a patron on Patreon, your level monthly is the number of tickets that are going into the raffle. Otherwise, email me at thepenskyfilevideo@gmail.com and put something like TNG Blu-ray in the subject title. I'll add you to the spreadsheet. After that, we're going to do random.org. It's going to pick one of the rows of the spreadsheets, and the second place is the movies. First place are the Blu-rays for all 7 seasons of TNG. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you, patrons, for making that actually possible to do at this point. But anyway, guys, let's go to final thoughts and ratings for Preemptive Strike. And also, no, I can't give you the Blu-rays. So what do you think of this episode?
Oh.
It's okay. I already own them. And that's a great giveaway, by the way. Someone is going to be very happy with that.
Thank you.
I would say that, well, I'll give it a 2-part rating. I think that as the second to last episode of the show, I think it rates about a 4, because it's just not very satisfying as the second to last episode of one of the most beloved television shows ever. However, in terms of, like, if I just look at it as an episode of TNG, I think it's about a 7. I mean, I think it's probably the second or third strongest episode of the 7th season, behind All Good Things and perhaps Parallels or something like that. And I think that it also does a fairly good job at telling a DS9 style story on TNG, even if it isn't completely successful. And also, I like the fact that Ro Laren leaves at the end. But even though we don't know what happens to her, we never find out.
Yeah, it's very sad in that sense. Richard, what'd you think?
I'd give it an 8 standalone, 7 series. I do like the character of Rolaren a lot. I like the idea of the Maquis. I find them compelling. I think it's interesting that...
Richard just likes her headband, by the way.
Yeah. No, my mom had very similar hair when I was very little, so there's... I feel that the Maquis in general, it's true, is one that is not as well done as it could have been, and yet I think it's done fine here. I certainly enjoyed the episode, and I was excited to watch it again. So
there you go. I'm going to give it the you guys ended up on around probably like a 3 or 4, I guess, on our 5-point thing. I'll give this one a 3. I think it's average. I think that it offends me on the sense that this is the second to last episode. If offend is the right word, it probably isn't. But the things that I hold against it are just because of its placement in the season. It's perfectly fine. It's perfectly salvageable. It's perfectly acceptable. And I think it serves the Maquis. It serves Deep Space Nine. It does everything like that it wants to do. It's just not really what I'm looking for from the series at this point. 3 out of 5, I think. Guys, thank you very much for coming on the show, and thank you for coming on to all the previous episodes that you guys have been on, maybe 6 of them at this point. Thank you for your time.
I think that sounds about right. Thank you very much.
Guys, you can check out trekaboutshow.com to find out these guys. They are just about to wrap up Deep Space Nine, so you can check them out over there. Otherwise, if you enjoyed the content, a like and a comment on YouTube is appreciated. Rate us on iTunes. Rate us on all your favorite podcatchers. Go to facebook.com/thepenskypodcast to leave the comment. Join the discussion. You can go to patreon.com/thepenskypodcast. Get a chance to win those Blu-rays before all is said and done. You have probably a week to donate and then cancel your donations after I give away the prize. And then after that, who knows? We're moving on to TOS for a abbreviated session, and then the movies and all that stuff. Guys, all good things coming up in a couple days with a little bit of everyone, I think, is going to be making up all good things. Guys, thanks again, and I will see you next time.